podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
So I heard from my sister's friend's cousin that Kohl's has the lowest prices of the season and had to see for myself. For real, the deals are so good. I got my kids' summer tees for $5.99, a cute swimsuit for myself for $17.99, and a shark vacuum for $199.99, which will be great after sandy beach days. I got Kohl's cash too, and I got it all in less than an hour with free store pickup. So yeah, summer, I'm ready for you. Select styles ends May 23rd. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Ese último McNugget me toca a mí porque soy la mayor.
¿Y eso qué tiene que ver?
Los mayores se respetan.
Eso no existe, ¿cierto, mamá?
Ya, quédense tranquilas. Aquí hay otra cajita de McNuggets.
Respeto, ¿viste?
No hay rivalidad cuando hay McNuggets deal. Hay un deal para cada salida familiar en McDonald's. Compra uno de tus favoritos, como unos McNuggets de 10 piezas, una Big Mac, una Quarter Pounder with Cheese o un Filet-O-Fish y te llevas otro por $1. Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. Válido para un producto de igual o menor valor.
Good evening and welcome along to the show, all forumites out there. The forumers are in the house.
Forontologists.
The forontologists. It's great to have yous all on as we get to discuss all the topical things that have been going on in the world of football over the last 24 hours or so. And even before that, maybe. Who knows? Joining me tonight, it's a smorgasbord of characters we have on the show tonight. We named this, we used to pun on this called the forum because there was four of us, and you might notice that we're missing somebody at the moment. So what we've done is we've done a lucky dip to see who might join us in a little while, and it'll be a big surprise. We'll let you into the secret when we know
it. We just sent the link out,
just sent the link in randomly into loads of WhatsApp groups, so who knows who's going to come on.
Just so everyone knows, Nilo was abducted by aliens today.
Yeah, again.
And again. He'll never ever be back.
Yeah, Nilo is now officially on the Voyager 3 satellite that's going to head out of the solar system and head off to somewhere where he'd be welcome. Over on this side, of course, is my good friend, colleague, and fellow founder of the LFC Day Trippers, Mr. Andy Young. And down here is, of course, one of my oldest friends from back in the hood. It is, of course, my good friend, Peter Smith. Welcome along, Peter Smith.
Legends, who are you?
Of course, we aren't even in the same country anymore, so it's pretty impressive that modern day science allows us to put this on. Right, look, everyone's along in the chat. It's great to have you all along the chat. It's great to see you all. What's the story with this media blackout? Are they still doing that crap?
It's ending tonight.
Oh, is it? Yeah, Grant.
The only one that's allowed to call it crap.
Are you? All right, Grant.
Yeah.
I don't believe in it, to be totally honest with you.
It's not going to change my life. No. Gestures don't change lives, but no. Action does.
And even at that, who knows? I'm sure they'll all finish doing the social media until they suddenly realise it's hitting them in their pockets. Tonight, lads, we have four topics. I don't know what the fourth topic is going to be, because it was going to be Nilo's topic, but what I'm going to do is, for all the lads in the chats, all the lads who are on there live, I want you to give me a four topic, but I don't want you to give me a four topic straight away. I want you to think about it as we go along. And as we get towards maybe around about 10:45, I want you to start thinking up of a topic based on the conversations we have and what you'd like us to bring in. Right. Most importantly, we do have a fourth member. It is Keith Plunkett. We've robbed him from the Fatback Four. We brought him into the forum. Fatback Four. Into the four. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. hand signals. Only fingers can do that for us. So it's fingers young. And it is good to have you. So Keith, I was just saying we had four topics, but since Nilo bailed, what I was thinking of doing was we'll do our three topics that we had planned, and then we'll ask the lads in the chats to come up with a topic, say around about quarter to 11 or so, and we'll use their topic when it comes up, because they might get pissed off with this chat and want us to talk about something else, right? Which is a fair show. I also want to say well done to Pete tonight for not being in his wardrobe, and hopefully his missus doesn't come out and kick him out of the front room, because
I'm on guard here, boys.
To be honest with you, looking at the setup between you and Keith, it's almost like you're on opposite sides of the same apartment. I'm just saying, like, this is it.
Keith bought a ticket for AC Milan.
Pete's apartment looks a lot warmer. Look at that lovely Barcelona evening.
So much
you can't argue with that.
It's minus three here. It's cold. It's raining. Yeah. It's windy.
And it's pissing rain outside, Keith. There.
Put the heating back on. Put the heating back on now. It's just, it's not.
Heating
it's,
on. It's, stew it's for not. The dinner. Happy days.
It is. Yeah, right, mate. Lads. Let's move it along. I have a chair tonight, so I can turn me back on this when I want. Nice. Proper host chair. That's when Andy told me I was hosting there, I said I'm going to use the host chair. It's really good. So if Crane Poilars goes down that route, he won't be going down that route for much longer. So
gone already.
There
gone
we go. No, that's what happens.
None of that carry on goes on here whatsoever.
Right, lads. Look, there's only been one story in the media for the last 24 hours. There's only been one story. Yeah, that's been cracking on with. So with that, it's going to give us the flavour for what we're going to talk about tonight. And I think, Andy, we have your one, you've got my one, and then we've got Pete's. But Pete's, I'm going to start with yours, because I think it's the bit that's probably the most liveliest topic at the moment, because I hear Carragher and Neville have been back on talking absolute bollocks again on Monday Night Football tonight, right? Mm. So, Pete, run us in.
Where do we start?
What do you want to talk about tonight, Pat?
I would like to talk about what I've been talking to an awful lot of our subscribers and listeners today on Twitter for the last few weeks, and that's the absolute hypocrisy that's going around, not just the Premier League, not just Sky Sports Studios, but the whole of football. I mean, it used to be that if I wanted to be entertained by lies, I would switch on Fox News and, you know, tuning into Tucker Carlson and his mates just for a laugh to see what was going on the dark side of the moon. But as it transpires, post-truth America has crept over to British and English football in particular. And I mean, if it's not for example, if it's not the Premier League who took 2 hours to respond to the threat of the ESL and take about 20 days to respond to racism, if it's not Newcastle fans who had been jumping up and down about everybody's lack of morals and where then wanted to petition the Premier League to be for a Saudi murderous regime to come in. If it's not them, it's Gary Neville, among his list of crimes, you know, Che Guevara himself decided that, you know, he would jump on the bandwagon of everything is evil about the European Soccer League and owners, and, you know, basically jump up and down whenever one of the big six or the evil six decided to concede a goal, except when Manchester United played Roma the other night, and basically he just started celebrating again. So I would like to talk about hypocrisy, to be honest with Phil. So ask me a question and I'll answer it. I have a ream of about 3 or 4 pages here written about the hypocrisy I've seen in football. Where do you want to start? We could start at the home of the new saviors of football, Old Trafford, which
I think we should, because some of the shit that's been spoken over the last 24 hours, between the wanking off of each other on Sky and the likes, it's sickening, right? And it extends out further. I'll get into my own topic later on, but like, Pete, you're focusing mainly on this stuff that's going on in terms of Sky, where they've positioned themselves as the bastions of the saviours of football after the horrific ESL has been thrown up there, right? So go on. Where do you want to, you Where do you want to start? Like, let's start with Gary Neville. So let's start with the biggest hypocrite of the lot, right? Who's getting the biggest airtime as the savior of football. Like, it's disgusting seeing what the level of commentary that's going on out there at the moment.
I mean, Captain Hypocrisy himself, to be quite honest with you, who's set himself up as the Enoch Pell, down with all the foreigners. Our British listeners will know about that reference. Set himself up, to be honest with you, at who is fit and who is not to own. Spend 1.2 billion euros or pounds on a football club. So let's start at ground zero. For me, I mean, we've looked yesterday. Everybody knows what happens, well documented. But the so-called legitimate complaints of the protesters or rioters, if you want to call them, were leveraging debts against the club. I mean, I didn't see any of these protesters standing outside. Paul Pogba, Harry Maguire, were signed for 80 and 90 million pounds, or when Alexis Sanchez was being paid 400 grand a week to play the piano effectively for 18 months, nearly 2 years. I mean, I suppose there were crowds outside Old Trafford while those things were going on, but they were with T-shirts saying Pog back, you know, or Maguire, British Steel is back, or with Sanchez, he's chosen United over City. So, I mean, before we even talk about Neville as a hypocrite, we can talk about Manchester United supporters themselves, who I know there's been pockets of them complaining about the Glazers. However, we didn't see the level. We haven't seen the levels over the last 15 years that we've seen yesterday, simply because they're not winning anything. I think, to be honest with you, the bottom line is Graham Souness is right. Gary Neville is obviously sick to his eye teeth of watching Manchester City pile success after success. And now that they're on the verge of probably securing a European Cup, maybe, and certainly winning the Premier League, I think it's gone too much. I think that he's shown his arse to the Saudis or to Amanda Staveley's gang, whoever will invest the 4 or 5 billion pounds that it will take to buy off the Glazers. And he's thrown in his gambit. I think the real hypocrisy here is I just can't believe that these guys are looking out the window. And I include Jamie Carragher in this, I include Gary Neville and Michael Richards to a certain extent, and actually saying, oh, it's just a couple of idiots, you know, causing a ruckus, and basically condoning violence and looking the other way. To be
Let's come back to that because I want to put this to Andy, because I asked Andy about this earlier on, and I'm baffled at this, right? So from what I can get, there's no common denominator through any of the protests that go on in England or have gone on in England and the fans of the football for outside of, we want somebody to own the club that has masses of billions and will spend all the money they possibly can in the whole world to pay, make us the best team ever and hopefully stuff every other team up. Right now, Andy, am I wrong? Am I, like, their biggest issue seems to be at this moment in time, and I'm talking about the United piece, right? Gary Neville is presenting as they need fans' representation. They don't get the club. They don't get this. They don't get that. Basically, they've been the biggest spenders and the biggest wage payers in England for the best part of 20-odd years now as part of the Premier League. And the United fans just want them to spend more and pay more, instead of taking the money from a club that's profitable and making them money as well. This is basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, look, without turning this into a Man United podcast, right, but I can understand some of their frustrations, right, because it's a story we've all followed for the last 20 years. They've been going on about this for a long time. But what happened yesterday was driven by Gary Neville's rebel politics that's been going on for the last 2 weeks, referring to this rift inside the camp inside the club with the fans and everything as a civil war. Now, it all blew up yesterday. There was people out protesting that didn't even know why they were there. They talk about the majority were there peacefully protesting. Yeah, the majority were there peacefully protesting, but even the so-called majority that they interviewed weren't even able to articulate what they were doing there. You know what I mean? Like, nothing has really changed in the last couple of weeks. Only there was the talk of the Super League, which no matter who owns United or any big club is going to want a part of that. And secondly, the way Sky have peddled all this up. And it was embarrassing to sit there and watch people lie through their teeth and try and excuse all that violence. Gary Neville has been on this campaign, and Sky have facilitated it, and it's really dangerous. They failed in their duty to report that story properly yesterday, and we'll get on to the FSG out thing later on, but it's given people other ideas as well, that this is how to actually tackle a problem.
Well, it's set a very dangerous precedent, Andy, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and Sky effectively made all that happen yesterday. Because Keith, people listen to idiots on the telly and they just do what they think what they think is the right thing to do. And they didn't, and half of them didn't know what they were doing there yesterday.
Keith, the United thing is probably most prevalent because it's those idiots who have caused the ruckus that's going on today, right? And people are celebrating the fact that they're idiots. But ultimately, like, this thing is being boiled. Like, I call United the hokey cokey team because for the best part of 15 years they've been glazers in, glazers out. They've been doing a dance, right? So and Souness was on the button, right? There was no mention of glazers out in January and December when it looked like they were going for the league. Yeah, there was no mention. Sky and Carragher weren't railing against for fan involvement and fan representation when there was no hint of a European Super League and the potential that they'd be out of a job at Sky. Like, Pete is right here that this is all just purely being driven by Murdoch's desires to maintain his stranglehold over football rights. The fact that BT is now struggling financially, so it's probably unlikely they're going to be able to renew their interest, means that Sky's real competitors in the football rights, for the English football rights, are going to be companies that have significantly more resources than Sky can pay for these rights. And we're talking about the Amazons, we're talking about the Apples, we're talking about the Disneys, the ESPNs that are sitting there, right? Now, sorry for a long rant, but I just want to set this up because I think this is fundamental to people understanding the level of hypocrisy they're listening to, because television nowadays is very rarely presented as both sides. Even the BBC is tainted when it comes to this, because they're basically the BBC News and the BBC politics side is basically the mouthpiece for the Conservatives in England when it comes to what it is. And I'll say the same in RTE here. They primarily present as the mouthpiece for the government. They don't. They aren't great at supporting the opposition or putting the opposition in front of people on the television. So it's just what happens, and that's the way television has gone. So my point, then, we go back to my long ramble there. But the point I'm making here, Keith, is that hypocrisy here isn't just focused on what's happened in the last 24 hours. This is a much longer thing with significantly longer tails that's going to have a massive impact on what goes on over the next world.
Yeah, 100%. We touched on it on the Fatback 4 last night. You know that Sky are nearly pouring gas onto this fire to keep it going.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's actually Geico.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Keep it stoked. When they're looking, and the Premier League are looking to have a closed shop for the TV rights, they're looking to, you know, go straight to the current broadcasters who are Sky to get free run at the TV rights going forward. No one mentions these things. Do you know what I mean? Like, it has to be, you have to be looking at, teams really need to be looking at the sort of subscription Netflix style TV deals that are, you know, it's in America, it's everywhere else. I mean, if you look at the TV deals, you can get all sports for a hell of a lot less. We're being, you know, over here you're paying for Sky Sports, but then you're not getting all the games. You have to have fucking BT, you have to have this, you have to have that, you have to have some, you know, different subscriptions. It's an absolute scam, and the hypocrisy does stem from the fact that, you know, Sky are these paragons of virtue, these, you know, bastions of morality, and they're anything but, you know, like Gary Neville. People think, the biggest thing that's annoyed me is that Gary Neville is being painted as, you know, Robin Hood type character. He's taken from the rich and given back to the poor. He isn't a shoe. He's an unbelievable hypocrite, that fella. No. And he's
this is behind a paywall. This is behind a paywall. Do you know what I mean? People are paying £150 for their Sky subscriptions.
Yeah. Yeah,
Gary Neville is a for sale hypocrite, Keith. I mean, let's face it, he's come up in arms about the Glazers. He took 7 years of salary, the last 7 years of his career, in excess of 100,000 euros a week, were from the Glazers. So that's hypocrisy. So what if he's such a Che Guevara figure, what he should do is get his calculator out and say, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give that back and I'll give it to the fans and they can buy the club with that. That's one thing.
How much is a Roman football hotel outside Old Trafford? Do you know what I mean?
Is that not Gary Neville's hotel, by the way?
Gary Neville.
Yeah, of course.
Gary Neville.
He's concerned that was hotel.
Yeah. To be this Keith about Salford, the club that he owns with Peter Lim.
Yeah.
Can I just keep... Because I listened this afternoon to last night's show, and I think he's still touching it, right? But I got frustrated listening, right? Because I really wanted to pull the United fan, and I just wanted to really go down him and say, what is your protest for? Like, outside of it's a bit of rust in Old Trafford, and it's gone, and they haven't been looking after the stadium, and our training ground's in bits, it's not one of the top five.
We're falling behind City, that's the protest.
Only City, like it's there's so many. They were probably Old Trafford, but if we go back 20 years, it was the biggest stadium in Europe. Training ground, Carrington or whatever, would have been top of the range. And there, his argument was, and I can understand this element of it, I suppose, that they're putting nothing into the infrastructure. So the Glazers, you know, they're taking their dividends every year. The money that United are spending is just money United are generating. And well, I think people have an issue with that. And I don't know why they have an issue with that. Because
Do you know what they've done? Do you know what Sky have done brilliantly? And we should all dot our caps to them. I'll tell you what they've done. They've put the likes of Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, Paul Merson, George Best, Rodney Marsh, you know, all these people, no, forget them too. They're kind of silver spoon guys. But all these regional guys from ordinary backgrounds, they've put them on the telly for 30 years and they've told you and me, we're just like you. The game belongs to you. And we've all just woken up, all of us, me included, from a 30-year coma. And we've realised that the game doesn't belong to us. The game belongs to Sky. And it took the idiot from Madrid to come along and try and put a consortium together to steal it from them. And the thing about thieves is they don't like being stolen from. And all of a sudden, everyone jumped, me included, jumped behind Neville at the start. God, he's right. Until you realised, hang on a second, this guy's on 2 million a year to stand up, pretend to be Enoch Power.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something about these people. They fooled us all, and I have to clap them. They fooled us all into thinking that we belong, we own the game. We don't. Rupert Murdoch is laughing at us all.
No,
Marionette on a string.
The game from fans 30 years ago.
The game just isn't fans. And the other thing I want to get to on this is the hypocrisy of the idea that fans should own clubs. The hypocrisy of the idea that fans make the clubs. Fans make the atmosphere, they make the spectacle, and they make the whole thing enjoyable to watch and enjoyable to be part of, right? But fans don't make the clubs. Because what the fan supports the product that's on the pitch, right? It doesn't support Vera the tea lady. It doesn't support Andy the toilet cleaner in the grounds, right? Like, the fan supports the product that sees on the pitch, and ultimately the fan is driven by the product it gets on the pitch, right? And ultimately, what we're dealing with here is that United fans throwing the toys out of their pram, okay? Throwing the toys out of the pram because they're no longer the undisputed top of the tree in England at this stage.
I totally agree with you, Phil. But let's look at Chelsea and Manchester City, for example. Nobody has a go at them. And Neville
top football
them.
Men. Top football men, they were called.
City were an inspiration yesterday, right? Let's talk about more hypocrisy. City were an inspiration. Let's talk about Micah Richards. I like Micah Richards. But Micah Richards is a patron at Manchester City. He actually has a lounge. I don't know if any of you have ever been. Yeah, exactly. He's an Ambo there. So, effectively, he's not going to talk against his own club. And that's fine. However, the real problem I have there is when you describe Manchester City as naive, having followed the ogres of Liverpool and Manchester United into the ESL. I mean, less than six months ago, they handed UEFA their arse in court with a team of about 14 lawyers. So don't talk to me about naive. Again, it's just a hypocritical agenda. Then Chelsea, nobody has a go at Chelsea because Abramovich will just say, fuck you, basically. I'll do whatever I want in the typical Russian Jew fashion. It's my money. I'll do what I want. So that's a waste of time. And, it's just, You know what's disappointing? Anybody that ever thought there were rules to the game, you know, probably woke up and went, well, there aren't. It's like CAS. It's like the thing that's going on with Manchester City now that nobody can talk about, that, you know, everybody's gagged over with the Premier League. There are no rules to the game. It's just the highest bidder takes it away and then builds the illusion.
If Keith, and in a job, sorry, Phil.
No, walk away, Keith.
Job, right, in an industry. Now, I'm not talking about a small company where you probably know who your CEO is, right? If you work in an industry, you know, that's a big multinational, they only care about the bottom line. They don't give a shit about the people on the ground. And football's no different. Fans need to understand.
It's a business.
And these people are billionaires. Like, you're talking about Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, Arsenal, like the Spurs. The value of these clubs, you're not talking millionaires anymore. You're talking billions.
But do you not think, Keith, that
billionaires could become billionaires by being nice and by thinking of, you know, the man on the terrace? They couldn't give a shit.
Well, Keith, how can Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher go on the television and pretend to people that it isn't a business? When Gary Neville himself was paying guys in the Vauxhall Conference, Adam Rooney, you know, $6,000 a week, when the nearest club was paying not even a grand.
Can I just put it to you that I think there's a toward motive going on in the background here, right? Is it possible that Neville is involved with a consortium, possibly with Beckham? I don't know about Staley, but looking to take over United, because I go back to the concept, and even the concept that FSG now are going down the line of looking at the Man City one, where you have multiple versions of your brand in multiple different countries' leagues, and you could have Miami United FC. That's MUFC. Inter Miami is David Beckham's team. Yeah. It would be very easy for them to take over that, and all of a sudden you have the United brand in Miami, you have the City brand in New York. Like, FSG must be looking at thinking, how do we get a brand then? How do we get another version of Liverpool in as part of this Red Board investment? This idea of where you have this franchise. Global brand, which is then franchised to different cities. If you can't get this Super League, how do we get our name and our brand in front of other people?
Well, they're fools if they don't, Phil. They're fools if they don't. And we're not the only fools.
As I love it now, conspiracy. is this not a toward spoke to this wheel, that potentially you're looking at a very successful businessman and Gary Neville, who knows very successful businessmen, and Beckham, and potentially looking to buy out this club?
I don't think so, personally. I think he's just dug a hole there, and yesterday was very obvious how much he was trying to scramble out of that hole, and they're doubling down now. So no, I don't think so. Look, if he's doing all this is a clever way to wangle his way into owning Manchester United. Fair fucking play to him. But no, I don't. I don't.
But don't. Yeah, exactly. But don't play Che Guevara. You're not here. Yeah.
Ask the Valencia fans what they think about Gary Neville and Peter Lim.
I
don't think he's that clever. I think that Monday Night Football show a couple of years ago was really, really good. Like, it was in insightful stuff, him and Carragher. And that's where they should have stayed. Now they're playing politics. You know what I mean? Gary Neville's fist pumping a rebel protester yesterday. I mean, why has that been accepted? You know, imagine this happened at Liverpool, like the uproar. Like, it's absolutely outrageous that he was doing that.
He actually should be arrested.
There's no fucking.
That's what I'm saying, Andy. Yeah. It's so detached from reality. Everything is just so detached from reality. I mean, a policeman standing who had his face slashed with Jamie Carragher, he had a smile on his face because he looked like he was happy talking to Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. Yeah. It's absolutely fucking perverse.
I think, Phil. I don't think he's that clever. If he was that clever, he would have stuck to what he was good at. He's playing a dangerous game here, and eventually everybody will be wired to this. He could take Sky down with all this, because Sky are going to have to part ways with this behavior eventually. I'll pull them up or do something, because like they were good, they were really, really good. I did look forward to watching them talking about a game on a Monday. dissecting the game at the weekend and listening to, you know, professionals that weren't long out of sport talk about it. And that's the sort of analysis that I enjoy it as a football fan. It's just a joke now. Like, the pair of them should be on Loose Women now or something.
But I want the last prong of this hypocrisy chat, right, comes around. What's really frustrating me, I'm going to talk about it next before we get on to Andy's topic, right? But what's really frustrating me is the hypocrisy in the coverage, because it's Manchester United. If Liverpool fans had broken into Anfield to stage a protest, that injured stewards and policemen on the way in, right, let off flares and caused the match to be called off, the coverage today in the press would have led with scenes reminiscent of something out of the 80s, okay? Yeah. That's what you would have got in the press coverage. Seems taking us back to the bad old days of Heysel and stuff like that. That's the references that would have been in the paper and the news today. And
they would have said Thatcher was right not to negotiate with the likes of us.
We are talking about hypocrisy. The hypocrisy and coverage that goes on. What has driven me mad is the Liverpool fans, some of the most vocal Liverpool fans involved in fan media and stuff out there, rushing to celebrate and support the protesters and what they've done.
There was one pony we won't mention today. I don't think it was you, Keith, or one of the boys, Davo, maybe showed me the tweet. No, it was you, Andy. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe what he was saying.
But I cannot get over guys who have a very large voice in fan media actively supporting people invading stadiums. I listen with interest, Keith, with what the guys were talking about last night, and they're saying, well, if we just had a protest, it would have been just a byline in the news. And I heard Shani said it would have been just a byline. It would have been Liverpool and United, whatever score it was, and there was a protest outside Old Trafford. But they could have made the same protest in a much more intelligent way, just by delaying the kickoff by an hour or an hour and a half, invading Old Trafford, causing the damage, injuring people in the protest. I tweeted from my own account last night about the similarities between what they did yesterday and what happened in Washington in January.
Same style of ring leadership as well.
Yeah. It's uncanny.
They vandalized their own fucking stadium. Yeah. I mean, to me, Anfield is a fortress, and
it's sacred.
The thoughts of people kicking in doors and storming in and fired and made and flares at this. But the thing is, and we said it last night as well, the whole thing I thought was devalued by that, because, you can have a protest and there's ways and means of doing it. And if they stop the buses from getting there and delays the game, it has an impact. When you see gobshites with bags of cans coming in and laying, shouting up at the gantry, "You scouse bastard, you scouse bastard." Yeah. That's not a protest about the Glazers.
Let's make a clear distinction here, gentlemen. Yesterday was not a protest. Yesterday was a riot. It was not a protest. A protest.
Sections.
Because if yesterday was a peaceful protest, the game would have went ahead. It's that simple.
But you can stop the teams coming into the stadium. You can delay it to make sure that the cameras and everything else are on the banners and the reasons for why you're doing it, right? Yeah. And get that attention. That can still lead to the same debate that they were having on Sky yesterday, because the game was delayed for kickoff. But with the positive nature in that, hang on a second, they didn't come in, they didn't wreck anything, they didn't damage anything, they didn't damage the ground and stuff like this, and this game will go ahead. And the only thought in people's heads will be that game kicked off an hour and a half late, ruined the TV schedules, but got its message across.
You see Norman in the chat there making a very, very good point, talking about Neville trying to drag Liverpool fans into it, and he was at it all day yesterday. I know Andy's going to talk about it later, FSG finances being in trouble. I would urge any Liverpool fans with any sense and any influence not to fall for that absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
FSG have managed us very, very well. Yeah, they've done some stupid things remotely on decisions.
We'll be getting onto that. This man,
so desperate is Gary Neville. God, he doesn't want Manchester United to be seen to be out there on their own. So desperate he is.
I can't understand why the people think it is okay. And I'm not giving them a pass. At the time, they kept saying in the Sky studio, well, we don't know what's going on outside. Well, everybody knows what went on outside now. And do you know what I mean? They still double down on it.
I think it needs to be said as well. Look, let's not be under any illusion. No matter what club was, I think I want to make this message clear. We're not bashing Man United fans, because I think any group of football fans or any group of people who are so emotionally attached to something will behave like that. That is just the nature of humans at the moment.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Oh, that's a cheer we used to do in softball.
What? It's actually Geico's.
Whenever someone hit a triple, we would wave our bats and yell, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. But we never got to use it, because we would only hit home runs. Annoying.
The phrase is from Geico, because they help save people money.
Geico? Yeah, they were our team sponsor.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
So no matter what people are protesting over, it always ends up in shit like this. But my gripe is with Sky facilitating that and encouraging it.
Okay, you know platform. What I mean?
Yeah.
Platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Fox so, in the United States, yeah. As you said.
It needs to be called out. There was no like unity there yesterday. Not most people didn't know why they were there. The banners should all read the same thing. But they're not. They're just turning up because they've been led to believe that this is the right thing to do.
Any normal broadcaster would have first of all condemned and apologized to the viewers for having to see that and condemned the actions of the lunatic fringe. The Sky didn't, because it didn't meet with their agenda.
Yeah, and but what's the guy's name? The presenter, David
Jones.
Like he gave them ample opportunities to do that. Yeah. And only eventually, really soon, as took the bait and went, actually, hang on. Look, it's a very difficult thing as it's unfolding live. I mean, 1 minute you're on the side of the protesters, the next minute, But this is the thing. Jones kind of gave them opportunities to condone it or to condemn it and only eventually Souness kind of took the bait. Like at one stage Souness like was kind of on the side of the protesters, and then before you know it, he was like, hang on a second, like there was flares thrown up here, like they were on the pitch, you scouse bastard at Carragher, and like these are thugs. Like why you allow them their way? Like if they want to encourage bringing the football back to the fans, there's better ways of doing it. And they could have sent out a way clearer, a better message yesterday. They absolutely failed in their responsibilities as a media, as a company that provides media.
Jones is in here, would have been telling them, listen, this is turning nasty, not just outside, but inside. Well, inside. You need to say we're looking at the lads on the bike, where Neville and Carragher wouldn't have taken the bait.
This is clickbait. And Keith, you know, we've talked about this before. We've talked loads of times. That was great television for Sky, because people who wouldn't even be watching the match tuned in to see what was going on, right? It stops being football and becomes a news story, and that just generates people to go and watch what was going on and seek out something that they could see, and then click down the websites to see what happened, to see what Neville said, to see what Carragher said, to see what the outrage is about. And when it comes down to it, as soon as hit the nail on the head, and it's right, it's back to the Glazers, Cokey, right? So, basically, it was at the start of the year, it's Ole in, it's Ole out. Ole in, give them a new contract because they're going to win the league. Ole out because they're getting knocked out of Europa. Ole back in because they're going to win the Europa. Ole out because they can't win the league, right? It's Glazers in because they spent 90 million on Pogba. Glazers out because they won't paint the stadium. Glazers in because they bought a shiny new tracksuit for Harry Maguire. Glazers out because they forgot to get the sponges for the medical bag. Like, it's just... it's nonsense, right? These fans are nonsense. And I would say the vocal majority of fan channels that are out there at the moment are spewing absolute nonsense with their open letters and their statements and all this crap that goes on. You mentioned last night you're into unions and you're a big union, you're a union rep, right? And to me, what's being put out there is just noise, a massive echo chamber of bollocks and crap being bilged all over the place with no cohesive request, statement, all-encompassing plan, strategy. It's just everything under the umbrella of the ESL is shite, and we're going to now give out about it. Would I be wrong? Like you're involved in it. You know what they're there for.
Yeah, you're dead right, Phil. The message isn't clear. The message isn't sort of... the only thing they're all coming together and saying is the ESL was bad. and that's it. But, you know, the Champions League is fucking changing into some, morphing into some ESL leading cast off, and anyway, and they've no problem with that. Yeah, they've no problem with that. Do you know what I mean? Like, the idea of people protesting is fine. I mean, Liverpool fans have protested before. We know that. But the reality is, I'm going to get lashed out even for saying this. Did the protests really get Hicks and Gillette out?
No.
Or was it the banks going to foreclose on? Do you know what I mean? Like, protesting will get you so far. And, you know, it was other things that got it. What happened, I think, yesterday was fans protesting, not knowing what they were protesting about different things. And then as soon as a few tinnies were involved, they were all just there for a tear-up. And it loses all its message. It loses its meaning. There has to be one message if you're going for a protest of that magnitude. And if the end game was maximum disruption, they got maximum disruption. So they'll say, job done. And a lot of people in the media will say, yeah, well, they got the game cancelled. Well done. It's not well done because it encourages people to do this as well. It sets a precedent for people to do this going forward. It sets a precedent for a player is injured and if a big game coming up, fucking tear up and block in the buses
we'll just
from
pretend,
leaving the hotel.
We'll just pretend it was about the ESL.
But it won't get a mention. Do you know what I mean? So that they're setting a precedent and it needs to be dipped in the bud. Any like protests in any industry or anything, people won't get behind it if there's not a clear and concise message. And to me, there's no clear and concise fucking message on this, given the
even
back
today,
to the fans.
And
come here,
even today, there's no message. And we have idiots in the Liverpool fan base celebrating what they've done, supporting them, saying this is the start of protests. Protests to what?
Yeah.
There's no way to say.
Look, every time the FSG made a boo-boo, Liverpool fans got quite animated about it on social media. Not too many protests in the street, and the decision was reversed.
Yeah.
So a bit of you can go about things in the right way and get your way, you know what I mean? And that's where fans and their owners, that relationship, like, you want to keep it as healthy as possible and keep it aligned as possible. Now, what's happening at Man United now, I would absolutely hate to endure that now at Liverpool, because we've a good team, we've a fucking world-class manager, we've a future. Like, and if this toxic team creeps in just because Sky told you to do it, it's going to be absolutely horrendous. And that's why my topic
it's not
tonight.
But Andy, it's not just Sky. It's also fan media channels jumping on board. These supposed fan unions or supporters groups who are unelected bodies who are basically just groups of fans getting together and taking it upon themselves to be the bastions of
Sky
of what you can and can't
Sky are at the top of the pile.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what I mean? They're pulling all the strings. You know what I mean? And I think it's going to be one of those. It's going to be interesting when it all blows up in our face. I'm confident it will.
Yeah. Yeah,
lads, I want to take the small minority piece on, because this is my topic, and we finish off because yours is positive, right? I want to take on the small minority. I am sick. I feel like I'm what's your man's name out of Family Guy. I feel like I'm about to do a grind my gears. Peter Griffin about to do grind my gears, right? But I'm sick to death of the small minority. I'm sick to death of that phrase. I've been watching English football for 40 years that I can remember, since I was a four-year-old, right? I've been watching the English media consistently use the term small minority to try condone violence in some form or another. And there's no other words to describe it. Try condone stupidity by people, right? And keep saying that it's the small minority, it's the small minority. When it was English international football fans abroad wrecking cities, wrecking towns, wrecking places, and not being wanted by countries to come at the World Cup. They are disgusted. They're despised. Countries that want them there as fans in nearly every World Cup. The only media that says they want to be there is the English one. The rest of them is just like, we don't want you here. We don't like you. And I know this as an English-speaking person going abroad. The first thing, English, no, Irish. They love Irish fans. Scottish, love Scottish fans. Northern Irish, love Northern Irish fans. Welsh, love. English, disgusting. Don't want to know about it, right? And why is that? It's the small minority. you can't have 6,000 people in Marseille throwing anything they can find from one side of the square to the other and call that the small minority. 5,000 people turn up at a protest yesterday and about 2,000 get into the ground or whatever it was that gets in there, right? That's not a small minority. That's quite a sizable amount of the crowd. If 5,000 people turn up and they're bringing bags of cans with them, they're not going there for the good of their health and to do a few chants and to hold up banners. They have planned to cause maximum disruption. They've broken into a stadium. They've broken the law, right? And they are not apologetic about it. And when it comes down to it, the small minority of fan media channels of Sky Sports are now supporting this as well. It's a small minority. The small minority is dictating the narrative that exists in the world at this moment in time. And if you give the small minority the megaphone it needs, it stops being the small minority and starts becoming the vast majority. When I watched the CNN coverage of the storm in Washington, it was only a small minority went inside the Capitol building and caused all mayhem. The vast majority were peaceful outside. That's been the line used by Republicans, the line used by Fox News. So if you're on the side of Fox News and the Republican side, there's something horrifically wrong with the argument you're trying to make. So stop pushing the small minority, because the small minority isn't the realistic thing.
How long did it take us to realize how much damage the small minority does for racism? Yeah. Like, it is a small minority of people that are racist, but we've had to, you know, there's been a worldwide campaign to call this out. Because a small minority can do a huge amount of damage to any cause. And now it's a small minority that are doing damage to the Black Lives Matter cause.
It's a cop out. It's a little clause to cop out.
That's creating huge conflict in bringing that message forward. You know what I mean? The players shouldn't have to be still taken to the knee so long after. This should be fucking nipped in the bud. And like we could go on all night about that as well.
You're right.
The problem with any small minority, right? The problem with the storming of the Capitol in the US, the problem with the English fans when they go abroad for major tournaments, the problem with even what happened to Old Trafford yesterday is the small minority can start this riot, but people that are there get sucked into it. So while you might not be part of the small minority at the start of it, that small minority grows and grows and grows. People that were in the Capitol, that were in Old Trafford yesterday, and I'm on about in the stadium, I'm not on about outside, I'm on about the ones that went in. They probably didn't go there to, oh, we're going to get into the stadium. But when a mob gets together like that and gets whipped into a frenzy, loads join in. So the small minority might be there with one little fucking thought in their head. But people join in. That's how it grows. That's what mob does. It grows and people go into it. That ardent
mob maybe mentality. Of that
mentality. Exactly. The ardent of that mentality, but they're in a mob and the mentality changes. Like, you can't excuse the small minority on this and that.
I think Master the Disaster makes a great point. Where's the outrage for racism? Where's the outrage for corruption in football? Where's the outrage for the Sheikhs and like dead right? And you know, we spend our lives moaning about the most simplest of things, and all that noise that's created by this allows the serious shit to go under the radar.
The smoke screen. Sometimes it's deliberate, Andy. Sometimes you know, a system will generate a problem in one corner, so as you ignore the other. I mean, if you notice, Massive Disaster makes a really good point, because I mean, you know, you look at even this weekend, for example, the tokenism. Sometimes tokenism can actually encourage the darker factions to stand up and say, well, fuck them and their token. We'll actually attack. And I've seen a couple of other members of other forums, like our Black members, posting tonight and this morning about some of the personal messages that they've received. Stan Collymore, for example, and I was impressed by his stance, and not a lot that he does impresses us lately, but he turned around and said he refuses to go along with this blackout because it's just yet another token gesture for us. For example, when the biggest example you'll see is when Nicholas Bentner wore the Paddy Power knickers and was fined 80 grand instantly. And, you know, a football association of Serbia fined less than 25% of that for a stadium full of bigots and, you know, aggression towards three black English players. The FIFA, UEFA, the Premier League, let's face it, and I'll be honest, they don't care about us. They don't care about black people. And I talked to a lot of black players, a lot of professional black players, a lot of black people of prominence on social media, and we'll speak to each other privately. And the bottom line is, they don't care about us.
Attention Social Security and SSI recipients. If you did not receive an economic impact payment for your eligible spouse or dependents, you may need to file a 2020 tax return with the IRS and claim the recovery rebate credit. Go to ssa.gov/EIP to see if you need to file a tax return and if eligible for other refundable tax credits, like the child tax credit. That's ssa.gov/EIP. Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
We have to stand up for ourselves and make things happen within our own community so things are better for us. This is all tokenism. I'm with Philip on this.
You speak about the Mead, the blackout they had over racism. There was a Guardian journalist came off as racism blackout to have a go at Graeme Souness for sticking up for, you know, for calling out the Manchester United fans. He says he's breaking his blackout because Graeme Souness needs to do one. Do you know what I mean? Like, where it's tokenism. What's more important?
Graeme Souness is on the ball there, right? And somebody else has said, I'm reaching for comparing what happened yesterday with the hooliganism of the 80s. I'm not. Because you start somewhere. So yesterday we started where there's fans not allowed into grounds because of what's going on with the pandemic. There's fans not allowed to go anywhere, whatever it is, are able to storm a ground. They're able to get past the police cordon, get past the stewards, and I don't blame the stewards for letting them into the ground. Why? They're not paid to do it, right? So, let them in, right? So if they're able to get in and then they smash up the fellas' tripods, they weren't even part of the club, wasn't even part of Sky Sports. That was just some photographer's gear that was smashed up behind the goals. They robbed the corner flags. All they were short to do was cutting the nets down to have a bit of crack, right?
They were climbing all over them as well, weren't
they? Yeah. So what's that protesting against? Where was the banners in the stadium? Where was the going over to the Sky cameras and putting? I remember protests going onto a pitch in Sky. I can't remember who it was. I think it could have been against Venky's. Do you remember when Blackburn the fans invaded the pitch and was organised and they had banners and stuff and they wanted maximum media exposure as to why they wanted the league to step in.
By the way, that was because those owners were Asian. They had Jack Walker for years, who was white and northern and rich, and they didn't want Asian owners.
I actually know why they wanted Venky's out as well, because it was basically just a cheap publicity stunt for Venky's. It was. They weren't putting any money into it. They were literally the worst type of owners. They were putting their club into debt and taking money out.
And they were also brown.
And almost, it has nothing to do with brown, man. Like, that's just bad business. Whereas the Glazers are being slaughtered for being good at business. And this is like, people hate saying this, but they're being good. They spent no money buying the club, have that club, and they're taking money out of it. And whether
one
they
of
like
the
it
biggest brands in the world, and it hasn't cost them a blade in sausage.
One of the most profitable clubs in the world. And and this is the thing, this idea of a small minority, to hear Liverpool fans and Liverpool fan media supporting this and saying, we should be copying this, we should be doing stuff, having proper protests outside Anfield is no use. I'm sorry, but I don't want to see Liverpool fans invade Anfield and get matches called off and smash up Anfield to make what protest? What's the protest they're going to be protesting? We want the ESL. We want to be treated. The CEO was meeting with one of the fans groups. Is it SOS or something? Our CEO, the Liverpool CEO,
the conscience of Liverpool,
the SOS. Tomorrow. So do you know what you do? If I'm one of the owners, I'm smart. I'm going to say to you, look, you know, we're not going to give you a shareholder or whatever, but we'll give you a representative on the board.
Yeah.
Right. So that you can represent the fans' view on the board, so as that we don't make mistakes when we're communicating with you in future. You won't be able to make the decisions and the stuff that we're going, but you'll be able to represent, put the voice of the fans in the room. Right.
Yeah, I mean, Barcelona is the best case, Phil. You don't want fans running the club anyway.
No.
To be honest, what you want is somebody there to say, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't furlough staff. I wouldn't do this.
Do you know what the best thing? The best thing about that is you have the lies that came out about Liverpool forelocking staff when they didn't, right? They were going to, there was such an outrage by the fans, they stopped it. Andy, you remember this. FSG pulled the plug and they said, no,
how many other fan owners of football clubs would reverse on decisions like that?
Yeah, true.
I think Abramovich probably would have went, shut the fuck up, you won't tell me what to do.
Can't even find me. I'm on one of the yachts.
Of course not. Well, I'll tell you, Andy, Everton are the best example. Everton claimed that they would never. Everton don't have full-time staff. They have contractors. And what they do is they just don't renew the contracts. So they can say they never for. I mean, it's just all an illusion.
Well, the Everton, the people that worked in the club shops for Everton, they were furloughed, but they were from a separate company.
Or other companies. But, so are you telling me that wasn't that was because Everton themselves didn't give them jobs? So, you know.
Go on, Andy. Going back to that, just when we talk about the small minority, you're a mad happy Top Red super fan, right? How disappointed in like, when do you get on board a protest? This is what I want to know. What's the point that you think, yeah, now's the time to protest?
Look, if Liverpool start releasing club accounts and a show that there was money leaving the club, and the reason we weren't spending on players is because the money, that was the reason that there were, then you have to start questioning these things and protesting. But like the Hicks and Gillette thing, for instance, they were putting the club into, you know, the threat of administration. I mean, these are the reasons to go and protest. But are we moving on to my topic? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so look, I never intended really to be this big FSG fucking John Henry profiler type, but here I am.
Yeah. This is the war.
You brought this up weeks ago and you were right. We were all wrong.
Let's be just clear, right? I don't particularly like them as people. You know what I mean? They aren't my heroes. My heroes are the players on the pitch and the players of the past and the managers of the past. I don't look up to them. They don't inspire me. I don't want to meet them. But they're the best case of a, you know, they're the best of a necessity evil, you know, necessary evil in the modern game. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm at peace with the fact that football that we grew up to is gone. Like, I adore the FA Cup. Like, and Phil, we differ in this. But you'll see, like FSG tell the manager, no matter who it is, Rodgers before, that doesn't matter anymore. You know what I mean? So our football, as we knew it before, is gone. You know what I mean? But I am grateful for their existence. I just hope that yes's reaction doesn't inspire our fans to create this toxic atmosphere around the appeal, because those owners are a lot more aligned with what our needs are as fans. And when Liverpool fans have kicked off about different things, whether it's been the ticketing or forlorn staff or trying to trademark the live report and stuff, they have listened and they have took. And I think they're just, their whole thing is they prefer to ask for forgiveness than to permission. So I don't know how it's going to work out as if they get someone on the board. But they're the opposite of the Glaziers, you know, in a lot of ways. They're more like the pre-Glazier United. They're opportunists who've seen that the potential of that club wasn't being maximized. You know what I mean? They've sweat the assets. Like you hear it being spoken when they met Klopp. He understood that this was a project for him because he saw that this whole brand, the fans, and this means more could be marketed around the world and they could grow the club together. Because Klopp's a bit of a businessman himself. He's not just this football man that doesn't know anything else outside. He'd be a success anywhere. So he recognized they were good owners. And he was the one that says everybody needs to calm down, relax. Because he knew what would come. When I say everybody needs to calm down, relax, he meant the media, not the fans. Mm. Because he's totally with the fans, you know, make no mistake about it, what we want. But our situation is completely different. Completely different. I really, really do hope that that it doesn't turn nasty, because we should be enjoying this team. Okay, we've had a shit season, but it's been down to an awful lot of factors. Let's see what happens next season when fans are back in the ground and we can't look at you know, players coming back from injury and building on the squad and everything else. But the damage that's going to be done to other clubs, you see BT now trying to offload some of their TV rights. There's going to be clubs that are smashed. You see in the Liverpool club accounts that came out last week, it's pretty healthy. Like, they took out that 200 million credit facility that they talked about a couple of years ago, they used that. But that's all being paid back by now. Well, that's the general understanding, that's being paid back. So because of that whole sustainable nature of the club, we get to come out of this a bit quicker than most clubs. And you could see a lot of clubs really suffer. You could see clubs go into administration next couple of years because of COVID. Mm. Look at the revenue that's lost. You know what I mean?
Spurs building a £1 billion stadium and taking out loans as well to cover, you know what I mean?
There's no sure thing that FSG are going to continue to grow the club on and off the pitch. Look how much their revenue has grown, like from 10 years ago when they came in. Look how much the wage bill. They've reinvested every fucking penny into it. You know, when success, the promise of success was awarded back to the players. And that's going to make want players to come and work hard for Klopp and to get rewarded like that. Because you see Werner at Chelsea, like, you know what I mean? Like, we stepped away from that because he didn't fit the culture of the club. And I think we're a lot more aligned with those owners than we believe. You know, and Klopp is, and you don't get anywhere. You don't get fucking anywhere unless there's unity in the club. Look, you have to just accept that these people are billionaires, investors, right? That's what they do. And we just got to hope that our ambition aligns with theirs as often as possible. And I think under FSG, it has, like 99% of the time. The blips, maybe they're not blips to a lot of people. But look, there was a big reaction to the £77 tickets, but they still kind of got their way. You know what I mean? They got rid of category games. If you're up in the rafters, you're still paying the same price as you are on the centre circle. You know what I mean? So the prices of the ticket did go up. So a lot of those problems, you know, you can dissect. Yeah, there was talking of furlough and staff. We don't even know whether that message came from the top at all, or whether that was a day-to-day decision. You know, someone made a really good point actually on Jamie's show, the Midweek Fix. The Liverpool's revenue is something along the lines, annual revenue is something along the lines of a Tesco megastore, you know, one of those big Tescos. Like, so yeah, they're making the same money selling beans and fucking toast as we are competing in elite football. So people forget that the money going around isn't as big as you'd imagine. And once you start losing big TV money or sponsorship money, they can't pay the players. And the business end of things, the day-to-day stuff like club shops and staff is like it's like anywhere else. You know, bigger companies, way bigger companies than Liverpool furlough staff. Look, I'm not making an excuse for it. It was a horrible thing, but it's just these aren't reasons to go start smashing up Anfield. That's all I'm saying.
But Andy, can I just on that, right? Yes, it was the idea of it was horrible for him to do. Didn't do it.
All the other clubs did do it. Except for the ones that could afford not to and used it as a PR spin. Well, we're not going to be furloughing any staff, Man City, Man United, after Liverpool got absolutely butchered for it.
That's why this is all false indignation, you know, and that's why it goes back to the original point. That's why the whole Manchester United thing is just a big smokescreen, you know, to try and attract some Saudis in to level themselves up with Manchester City. Let's be honest. All of these things were threatened. The ESL is not being imposed on anyone. Andy is right. Yeah. You know, I mean, I hope, to be honest with you, if nothing else is taken from yesterday, is that 90% of Liverpool supporters should now look at our setup and our ownership and think, my God, we're in good shape.
But the problem is they don't want that, don't they? You know, you ask a lot of Liverpool fans, well, what do you want? FSG out. Who do you want in?
Well, Blazers.
Yeah. Do you know, I don't know. Who do you want in? Oh, Middle East money. Well, Middle East money is not always the most morally clean, and I'll guarantee they're not socialists either.
The guys that are having a go at Andy here in the chat, I'd love to know who they want in.
But can I just on this, and I think it's very relevant, and it's something that, you know, I laugh at most of the times, because like there was that banner today with United, it was Glazers out, Gazprom in, right? Do you know what I mean? And Keith, like, what people don't realise is that everyone goes on about how close we were to going out of business. We were never going out of business. That was a forced sale. That was a forced sale led by the Royal Bank of Scotland, when they put their own man on the board to make sure that forced sale would go through, and that either the facility was repaid or was refinanced, right? And everyone gets hung up on this. The forced sale was the ultimate outcome. Had Hicks and Gillette managed to refinance that with an American brokerage or a hedge fund or whatever it was, they'd probably still be there. They probably or they would have been there for a good while longer.
Depressingly.
In the same way the Glazers are. I still think they probably would have torn the ship around at some point in terms of the revenues, because they would have had to service whatever facilities were going in there. And we were very fortunate that the Bank of Scotland decided that they were going to pull the plug on the facilities, and pull the plug aggressively on the facilities, because most banks wouldn't. Most banks would have let them have more time to refinance it. But it was just because of the credit crunch.
Hey, imagine if all your frustrations about advertising your business could be solved right now. You should know that podcast listeners are more engaged and higher converting than any other advertising medium. So try AdHub today and reap the rewards of Spreaker's self-advertising platform. It makes it as effortless as ever to be heard by thousands, regardless of the listening app they use. Visit Spreaker.com/AdHub. That's Spreaker.com/AdHub. And start using your advertising dollars in an impactful way.
Just because of the size of that led to what happened. And taking Andy's point, FSG to me are the perfect non-sugar daddy owner. Right? People won't like this, but they're the perfect non-sugar daddy owner. They've closed the gap from where we were with United to where we are. Where in terms of, I think there's only a 50 million or a 60 million difference in terms of commercial revenues. When this started, there was hundreds of millions.
Miles away.
We weren't even on the same pitch as United when FSG came in. They've leveled it up. Have they got things wrong? Of course they have. But despite this idea that they don't listen to the fans that's out there because of the ESL thing that went on, in the vast amount of times, okay, you know this from redeveloping Anfield. They listen to the fans.
Yeah.
They, instead of going and building a new shiny stadium.
Yeah. Which is actually the cheaper option.
Yeah.
In the long run, when all things are considered, to try and the work that had to go on to try and redevelop Anfield was more costly than just building a new stadium and going into a fresh. You know, they were really innovative in the way they built the main stand around. And like long may it continue. The redeveloping the Anfield Road end, and I think one day we might see the Kop redeveloped too.
Keith, what's your preference? Do you prefer the FSG model? And I'm talking about as a Liverpool fan. I'm not talking about as in general. Yeah. Or do you want sugar daddy?
No, I prefer the FSG model. Yeah, really, Phil. They've got stuff wrong. Every owners have got stuff wrong. If you go back to Manchester United, fans are complaining, and Adam, who was on last night, the stadium is in bits, the training ground is in bits, the area around the stadium is in bits. Well, you can't say that about Liverpool, because since FSG have come in, the stadium has been improved, the area has been improved, and the training ground has been improved for very low costs. And it's been done, you know, to the extent that it has. They're taking money out of the club at Manchester United. Well, the FSG aren't taking money out of Liverpool. So, you know, what are we complaining about? We're complaining because they're not buying Kylian Mbappe and Alfinger Haaland. They probably buy Alfinger Haaland, but not Erling Brau Haaland. They're not buying Jadon Sancho. And that's what, you know, people want. And this is what sort of annoys me. They say FSG don't get the culture of Liverpool. What owners in this day and age, in this now fucking £1 billion industry, is going to get the socialist values of Liverpool? None. It has to be separated. FSG are in there. They're not putting the club in any financial damage. They're elevating the club in every fucking facet of it, of the business side of it, of the commercial side, the revenue, and the playing side. And people are too quick to say, oh, that's down to Klopp. Well, they got Klopp. Do you know what I mean? They got Klopp into a club that were on their knees. Do you know what I mean? Like, Jurgen Klopp was the top manager in the world at the time that was available. We weren't the top club looking for a manager at the time. Do you know what I mean? They had to get him in there, and they got him in, and they put a team around him. People don't like to give them credit. I'm happy with them as an ownership group. They make mistakes. Everyone does. Every fucking ownership does. But their mistakes are minute compared to others. And this ESL thing, my stance on that was, if that had gone ahead and we weren't in it, we'd have looked like absolute gobshites, and fans would have been screaming, why are we not in it?
This is my whole point. Don't let the ESL thing be the turning point to turn us into what, because this shit at United has been building you type into Google Glazers out, you know, 2-0. Like, you're going to get every single year since the last 20 years nearly, you know what I mean? 2003 to 2004, this whole movement has been happening, and it's been building and building. Don't let us become then over the ESL thing.
Exactly.
Can I throw just one, because I think Free World put it in there that FSG didn't change Liverpool, Klopp did. Right now, here's the thing, and this goes back to my point I made just earlier on, right? fans don't give a fuck about anything bar what goes on the football pitch. But in reality, a football club isn't what goes on the football pitch. It's what goes on in the boardroom. It's what's going on in the account, and it's how Vera gets paid. It's how Andy in the toilets gets paid, right? That's just as important to them as how we're going to increase the contract of Mo Salah, right? So that's a common example. But I go back to it and I keep going. Right, the other big piece of this is what attracted Klopp to the role, right?
Yeah, that's well documented, Phil. When they met in New York, a lot of their business minds met.
Yeah.
And what attracted them to him too? It wasn't just
the same,
like,
values in business as he has with players. Simple.
And in business in general. And in running the club. Like, it's huge. To understand the Klopp, and we're talking about Klopp, we're not talking about a different manager because of what he's delivered for us and what he is to us as a group of fans and as a group of supporters. The reason he's here is because he believes in FSG. He believed in the model that was put in front of him. He didn't go to Manchester City. He didn't go to Chelsea. He didn't even go to United. He turned down the opportunity to manage Manchester United. He's on record of saying this because he didn't like the way the club was run. He came to Liverpool because he likes the way the club is run and the people involved in the club and the people around the club and the owners of the club. And I think you could see how much he was disappointed with being kept in the dark around the ESL thing. I think the whole issue with this ESL thing was the PR. I keep going back to this. This could have been an easy open door win for them just by including a simplified way of getting in and out of the tournament and having the management and the boards and everyone all on board. So it wasn't a super secret meeting of two or three guys in a room who only knew what was going on. And then it was just announced to the world.
Yeah.
Because that was the fall down of it. Wait till people see the cat's abortion of what's going to happen from 2024 onwards. I think somebody put the topic in. What do we think of? Where do we think European football and UEFA is going to go over the next 5 years? I think that's what we close out on. But I'm not going to close off on Andy's topic.
Phil, free world is always trolls me, the old comments and all that. We have a bit of crack in the comments. Fair play to him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's saying that Klopp closed the gap. Of course he did. Like, and when we win, it's Klopp. When we lose, it's FSG. You know, this is a joint effort. You know, everybody needs to be singing off the one hymn sheet. And it's not really so important who John Henry is over in Boston. It's who he recruits, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, Billy Hogan's and from the day-to-day management of the club. Like, that's really what's most important. And I think they've got that right, especially with Klopp as manager, especially with the freedom that Klopp has had to bring in who he needs to make. Klopp always talks about, he brings in, if somebody knows more than him on a subject, he brings them in. You know what I mean? He looks to them. That's the type of leader he is. He motivates the people around him. So I think that's most important is who they employ, who they recruit. So when you say take credit away from FSG because Klopp did it, they recruited Klopp and they recruited everybody else that's working under Klopp and over Klopp. So that's just my point on that.
Pete, how do you feel about FSG in the current climate, given everything that's going on? Because the hyperbole is that all owners are shit that own the top six clubs in England and they should all be set on fire and burnt and then sent off in a boat
rubbish.
Back to America.
Absolute rubbish. Delighted with them. To be honest, their only crime is buying a business, running a business and making decisions as they see fit and trying to better that business. There are some groups of fan groups out there who take the moral high ground and think that they should be consulted, even when sometimes the financial rules say that they can't be consulted. I think it's ridiculous. I think people need to grow up. Football as a business, and the business of our football, Liverpool Football Club, is in good hands. That's all I have to say about it, to be honest.
Right. So on that then, and I'm sort of leading into the discussion we were having, because this ESL, or the concept of the ESL and the narrative that was put out there about the ESL, it's 10 past 11. Pete's off now to get put 10 cent in the meter so that Mrs. lets him keep talking.
10 past 12 over there.
I know, 10 past 12 over there. But to be fair, right, I'm coming, like, this ESL is driving so many weird narratives that's going on. And it's really just a case of what can fans get behind to give out about how their club is being run? Because let's be honest about this. The criticism of the ESL is now defunct because it doesn't exist anymore. So like, how can you keep giving out about all you can give out now about is about your owners and take out what you don't like about the owners? So where do we see, Keith, you're well-versed in European football, UEFA and all that type of stuff. What do you see the future of European football being over the next 5 years?
The idea of a European Super League has been going around for 20 years. Do you know what I mean? It's long been muted, and we've all heard it over the years. The way this one dropped was the big bollock. You touched on that, Phil. You know, that it got dropped and thrown out there for everyone. We're doing this, we're doing it next season, blah, blah, blah. UEFA got an absolute tap-in open goal with that because they're a shit show. What they're doing is slowly killing football as well. And their new Champions League that's coming in 2024 is not too different than a UEFA Super League. It just means they're getting their slice of the cake, bigger slice of the cake than anyone else. So they're looking after themselves, you know, and they're not stupid. They knew they needed them 12 clubs back in the fold very, very quick as well. And that's why UEFA aren't looking to punish them either. Do you know what I mean? UEFA aren't going to be doing that and silly like banning them from European competition. The Premier League are still threatening to punish the six clubs. That's on the news today. Do you know what I mean? It's for nothing, no tournament ever happened, but they're looking to do that. UEFA are a shit show. I think there has to be not reforms in European competition, but I think it will go closer to what the European Super League was muted than what the Champions League are doing and getting away with. Was the original plan right? No, I don't think it was. I don't think getting, you know, a closed shop where Liverpool are one of the biggest names in the world. Let's say Spurs. Spurs aren't. Spurs are a big club. They're traditionally a big club in England. We all know that. Spurs could finish bottom of that Super League and they get into it the next year. They could finish 10th in the Premier League that year and still get in. And that's what people, I think, had a big issue with. If there was a way that they could have expanded the Super League into a two-tier system so that it's not just teams from five countries in it, it might have been more of a goer. But the nature of it, the closed shop, which the new Champions League are saying, if United were to miss out on qualifying, their coefficient will get them in anyway. Mm. What's the bleeding? What's the difference? It's to ensure, and this has been the Champions League over the years, increasing the number of teams that were allowed in from certain countries ensured that the big teams would not miss out. And then money comes into it, there's more big teams, and then big teams are missing out. So, you know, they just want to protect their baby and not entertain another one. I think the whole thing needs a reform. I think it's going one way. It's not a good way. But people will say, oh, no, it's the European Cup. It's not the European Cup. It's the fucking Champions League. It's a totally different thing.
If you wanted to experience football like it really should be, there just should be one team from every country going to compete. Yeah. You know what I mean? You're rewarded to go on the European stage and win it. But that's not what football is these days. So you may as well just have a big ESL. I'm not for it. I'm totally against it. As I said earlier on, I'm totally against the whole idea that the FA Cup is a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
I enjoyed some really good times with the FA Cup and the League Cup. Yeah. And the UEFA Cup.
UEFA Cup, yeah.
It's all a bag of bollocks now. And we may as well, Phil, we may as well, like, now we've got
the FA Cup's a bag of bollocks.
No, the FA Cup is beautiful.
Is irrelevant. Most
of the viewers are probably agree with you there, you know, because it has been an absolute load of shite for the last couple of decades. But that's what traditional football should be about, you know, giving the little clubs the chance of coming up against the massive clubs and then playing the proper team out. And then the cup final day should be two of the best teams in the country, you know, and that's not what it is anymore. And it's the same in Europe. Like, it's just everybody from everywhere. And as I think Keith is absolutely on the money, you know, and they'll play the percentages over the years, and they'll make sure that Juventus are always there, Inter are always there, no matter what. Milan will always be there, Liverpool, United, Arsenal, Chelsea, they'll always be there. You know, they'll always, and that's what the future is. So do we embrace it, or do you, because if we want it all reversed, it's like it's going to take a massive effort.
Again, it sort of touches on all the topics we've done tonight, but I think it's hilarious. The ESL is the worst tournament ever, yet it was structured better than any of the Champions League tournaments have been so far, right? And the idea of having a playoff at the end with two league campaigns is brilliant. The current UEFA are going to have some type of fucked up competition in 24-25, which they'll quickly reverse when they see viewing figures drop off horrifically. When you have a random algorithm generating who's playing who at the start of the season over a random number of fixtures in one league, where you at Liverpool could be in the same league as United, not play each other, and United could finish top of the, I don't know, how can you have a league where the teams don't play each other at least once? It doesn't make any sense, right? Mm-hmm. So as I said to you, it's a horrible, disgusting piggery of a tournament, which when people are saying here people aren't interested in football, they'll be less interested when they see this. When Manchester City get drawn to play in the random algorithm, Uzbekistan's under-12s goat-haired national side, right? Ukrainian side, yeah, some Slovakian side, and they don't get to play a single big team in the league and win all the matches and come top of the league and be four seeds going in. They'll be saying it's a lot of bollocks. There's no real merit to what they're trying to do. I don't think football is sustainable in its current form. There's too many clubs in existence, too many full-time clubs in England, professional clubs in England. Most leagues don't have a professional league below the second tier. So it's like at that stage it goes to semi-pro. That doesn't happen in England.
Too many of them struggling as well.
This is the whole problem. You've got this whole sort of pyramid structure that exists in England that are reliant on this top level and the filter down the transfer fees. I think this summer's going to be an eye-opener for a lot, because I think the teams at the top won't have the money to spend as they have done, and it's going to cause an awful lot of trouble for teams at the lower end of the pyramid, because that flow down of money is not going to be there. And the biggest challenge to European football as we know it is going to be FIFA, not the Premier League, not the fans, not the owners. It's going to be FIFA, because FIFA want to get rid of the World Cup, and people aren't going to like this, right? But I don't see international football in 20 years time. I can't see it in its current form. It's not watchable. The interest is being massively lost in Western countries where their biggest television rights are being sold. I think the seller for them is a World Cup, a proper clubs World Cup, right, where you have regional zones and you end up in a tournament either every 2 years or every 4 years or initially in between the cycle of the World Cups, which actually then goes in conflict with the European Cups and the African Nations Cups and all those other ones that are being done. And when you bring those in, that's when the real pyramid gets threatened, because FIFA will say that those players can't play in their international tournaments because they have to prioritize the FIFA tournament, which will be the Club World Cup. Once you focus on clubs, international football dies. Once you focus on the international top end clubs, domestic leagues die. Who's going to watch Burnley against Watford? Why would you watch Burnley against Watford? I don't care about mid-table teams, right? You could not pay me to watch Aston Villa against who's in the Premier League, West Brom, whatever it is, right? You couldn't pay me to watch one of those games. There's nothing enjoyable to watch in that unless you're a fan of those clubs, right? You could pay me, or would happily pay to see Santos against Barcelona in a World Club Cup. I'd happily pay to see Kashima Antlers against AC Milan. What was the crowd that used to be in Sensible World Club of Soccer? The Ghanaian team. You used to be able to sign loads of those players, and they were brilliant in the game, right? So this is gone. But anyway, let's go back to the mid-90s. But all I'm saying to you is, ultimately, no matter what way you do it, we're going to have this cat's abortion of a tournament, because it's got whoever signed up to the Champions League, they've signed up for the next 6 years. These things come in 6 year cycles. And that's why nearly once every decade we hear about a European Super League. And every decade we get one step closer. And we got very close this time.
Yeah.
I think we're getting much closer to what that's going to be.
But I just want to jump in there. Orkiomar says, I wouldn't watch Santos against Barca. Well, you wouldn't at the moment, and you wouldn't in the current World Club Championship because it's not got any competitive edge. But if you make that a competitive tournament, you'd be all over that. Someone else says they're funk and wasted. River Plate versus Real Madrid. Be one of the biggest games in world football, if you know football history. Yeah. That'd be absolutely mammoth. And if you're looking at that in a competitive nature, like that's what football's all about.
Well, you're talking about South
America. We're brainwashed.
And we think that only European football exists. But to be honest with you, I think the huge, big problem with the ESL.
Wendy's Frosty Chino is cold brew with Frosty Creamer. So ditch the stuffy coffee shop and say hasta la vista, barista. Because only Wendy's Frosty Chino is cold brew with Frosty Creamer. Choose wisely. Choose Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Is that Fiorentino Perez probably was threatening to give football a sneak preview as to what UEFA were planning to do with it. And UEFA didn't like that very much.
Yeah, Hearts of Oak. Good man, Mohamed Yogi. Hearts of Oak.
From Ghana. Neil Lampety and all those players.
It is, it is, like, I think you're right there, Pete. You know, it on reflection, with none of the owners told their people below them about it. Like, was there much planning? Even the website looked fake.
I think he went off and got a very big backer, maybe from China or the United Arab Emirates, and decided I'm going to do this tournament myself, and I'm going to promise the clubs a bigger slice of the pie.
Because
48 hours later, UEFA had upped the money to say, oh, we've got 7 billion on the pot. It's like a bidding war, to be honest, which is all it was.
I heard Gav made sorry for the European Super League. That's all I'm saying. Gav and Stephen Daly both were working to get our hair in the European Super League on the Sunday night when they announced it. It was just throwing them, quick lads, rack up a site there, will you? Comic Sans font.
All done for charity in case the tax man is watching.
Just looking at Shane Downs, VAR has totally gone off the conversation lately, hasn't it? God. You know, it's forced, well, apart from Jamie, it's the first time I've seen VAR mentioned in the last while. I think as much as I've supported VAR, I think I'd like to see it go just to make Jamie happy. Just to make him happy and let him fall back in love with football.
But that's another thing that sort of, you know, we don't like this, get rid of this. This isn't their game. This isn't what we do. And it's been made to fail.
Invade the stadium.
That was probably a VAR protest when your man fucked the camera down onto the pitch. Is that VAR? Yeah. Get rid of that. You know, it was destined to fail. It was always destined to fail.
That's
right. Really, I was hoping to smash his face.
That's another thing about the power of social media these days. There's too many people are trying to represent everybody. You know, what is that? Like, that people are speaking for other people all the time.
And moral consciences. I don't want to name names, Andy.
Yeah, but yeah. Phil has an opinion on this as well, but open letters, statements being released from nobody's. Like, come on. Like, where is this? Where is entitlement? It's the cancer of personality trait, isn't it? Entitlement.
What's that, Gav? Tell them to shut up. Okay. Gav says shut up.
Why is it that people feel like they can speak for everyone nowadays and tell everybody what you think? That entitlement. It's disgusting.
And Andy, can you imagine the crack if there was a fan representative on the board? Can you imagine the war, right? As I said to you, lads, it's like the scene out of The Life of Brian. There'll be splitters all over the shop. That's the Judean People's Front over there, and that's the People's Front of Judea, and that's the Liberation Front of Judea over here. What did the Romans ever give us? Well, they gave us the canals and working sewerage. It's when you step back and start, when everyone's giving out saying, well, they're not doing this and they're not doing that and they're not doing this and they're not doing that. It's when you step back and say, well, what have they given us? And you realise how much they've actually done and what they've delivered. It's fantastic. Mm. And it's very hard to say they're terrible people that need to go in the bin because they wanted in on a tournament that was going to double the revenue and make them one of the richest clubs on the planet. I'm sorry.
Here's a here's a bit of an off-topic question, right, which is after this comment from Shane Downs that they make me think of it. Like, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, to be honest, 100% agree. People shouldn't be following crowds, also known as zebra pants. Yes, they, okay. and that's what I find a lot of people's it's opinions on social media are for the audience as opposed to what people are actually saying. So anyway, the off-topic question, I'd be interested to hear what P has to say. If social media was validated, so you had to be yourself on social media, would it encourage freedom of speech, or would it hamper people? Would people be afraid to speak their mind? Do you think it'd be a positive or a negative thing to have a social media platform where people had to be themselves?
If you're asking me, it would be positive in the sense that there would be nobody abused anymore. So that'd be out the window. But it would be just like, you might as well just have a social media poll. Okay, here's the three options. Do you want A, B, or C? And that's what social media would be. I think there's a lot of cowardice out there. I mean, I go on in my own name. We all go on in our own names here because we're not assholes. But everybody knows who you are, Phil. We're not arseholes. We don't want to abuse people. Okay, we have private forums and we say what we have to say indoors like normal people. But I think there's a positive side to it. Yeah, a lot of these. I mean, I get abused by, I've never been abused by John Smith, you know, accountant from Leicester. I get abused by Bazo697, who wants to call me a woke nigger. You know, whenever he feels like I've said something that doesn't please him. So I still think everybody should be verified. And then you would actually see people having to think about their opinion before they offer it, because what they're thinking of, okay, I want people to understand that I'm not an idiot. So I'm going to have to think about this topic and search how I really feel about it before I offer an opinion, instead of this reactionary bullshit that we see all the time. Oh, and by the way, you know, Phil has something to say, so I'm just going to call him a knacker from Drimna, or Andy has something to say because he's a Northsider or whatever. Mm. You know, people would actually have to think about what they have to say. So there's never going to be a negative for accountability. I'll never say.
So that, you know? So where would you stand then on, I mean, the one of the counter arguments to that is that people, maybe they're working in a certain job or whatever, they won't speak out, and they'd be kind of hushed by the fact that it's them.
I think Norman hits it on the head. The problem for me with all this, you have to verify and you have to have accountability, is people don't accept different viewpoints. Nobody accepts different viewpoints, right? And if you aren't on the non-offensive side of the fence, people are going to take offense and they come at you like a mob. So you can't say, Andy, if you honestly have a viewpoint that doesn't fit with the liberal agenda, which is, and listen, people are going to think now a big, huge conservative that's there, and I'm a mad Republican, but it's not. What I'm talking about is, if you aren't ultra woke in everything you think and say and do, then you're basically going to be cancelled. It's cancel culture. And the problem with, and that's why, for me, I do not believe in this idea of having to make people identify themselves. I'm fully on board with social media companies banning somebody immediately if they have abuse somebody or anything like that, and that's where they let themselves down. But I don't believe that you should be made to put your name, put your view, or anything like that. The problem I have, right, with this massively, is that, again, cancel culture and the way people approach different opinions is disgusting. I should be able to say something that you don't agree with without the fear of being cancelled because I have an opinion to that level. The idea of social media is people are meant to be able to speak their mind. It doesn't mean that you have to speak the 100% political correctness all the time, because you may not believe in the political correct view. You may not believe that that's the right thing. And I'm not talking about racism. I'm just talking about things in general. You might think that that's a ridiculous thing. You might think, I don't believe in unisex toilets. I think it's the wrong thing. I think it's disempowering, or whatever the word is, for women to have that in there, to make women who are scared to go. And then somebody will come at me and say, there's no such thing as gender. There's no such thing as sex. And how dare you say this? And this is all about, and I'm there going, I'm sorry. This is why I do not want to get involved with this type of debate. And some people say, well, I want to get involved in the debate, but I don't want to be able to put my name to it, because I don't want to be personally seen to hold an opinion that may impact me if I'm going for a role or a job somewhere else. Right. And that, to me, is, you cannot have debate. You cannot have constructive and engaging debate on any type of social media platform if you force people to verify and validate themselves only as what they are. You know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think there's a difference between, and we need to make a distinction between attacking people for who they are, i.e. who they were born, their skin color, etc., and what they believe or what they think. And that's the difference between, you know, discrimination and critical thinking. And I think there's a there's no line between both on Twitter and social media. People, they go from, if they can't handle somebody else's critical thinking based on their beliefs or based on their opinions, they slip over to the other side of, oh, I'm just going to attack who you are. And that should be the line that is not allowed to be crossed. The minute you cross that line, it's over. The debate is over.
Kevin Sullivan, I can't see that comment. I don't know what you're talking about. If there was something,
I called you Northsider, and right. You just let it go.
I thought there was a scummy comment or something. I didn't read it. So, it's a chat for another day, isn't it, Phil? Yeah. Whether we would benefit from having verified, but people would be afraid to speak up under their own name. But then, as Pete does say, 100%, it would stop this troll behavior. People, once they know it's them, it's all well and good being a pretendy account and making racist remarks at players or sexist remarks at female pundits and whatever. Like, it's
free speech is a fine thing, but you know, racism and homophobia is not. So,
yeah, you know, and you probably find that most of these people are making those remarks, and then they're normal people in real life, you know. So it's I think we need to stop that.
Again, you made the point earlier on the apologies that what about bosses, you know, I think then that trips over to another boundary, that, you know, bosses should be invited to understand that people are free to express their opinion based on critical thinking, you know. And I think it should be the same rule upwards and as downwards, you know.
Exactly. It's another point I was going to make. When people are wrong about their views on whatever it is, they should be challenged and educated as opposed to shamed, you know. I remember John Barron speaks out very well about pretty much all topics, but he made a boo-boo himself one time when he was on Big Brother, and he talked about how he still feels homophobic. And he was slaughtered on social media over it.
This is my exact point.
But he was honest enough and brave enough to come out on a TV show, the purpose was to educate people that you're not responsible for your own thoughts a lot of the time. And the shaming of people, the taking down of people, I often wonder why somebody who campaigned so hard for a cause wants to make things so trivial. You know, again, we've all said things we've regretted in the past on social media or in people.
Can I say something, Andy? What we say today, by going on the accelerated pace of what's not acceptable, right, won't be acceptable in a year's time. And what we say in a year's time won't be acceptable before we even say it. So it's like, at this rate, at some point, and the worst thing about it is, for all the good that comes out of people trying to learn and be challenged and be educated, for all the good that comes out of it, right, so much more gets thrown in the view of righteousness that you often lose the wood through the trees, right? You often just see that this is the wrong thing and this is the wrong thing and this is the wrong thing. And then if you cannot have an open debate, people who need to be challenged and need to have that debate and have their views and viewpoints challenged no longer appear. And they go off and they find other places and just end up being with like-minded people, because they don't feel like that there is where you... that this is somewhere where they're free to speak their mind or free to engage with a debate, because if they do, they'll be ridiculed and potentially have their lives impacted. And look, that's not a defense of racism or anything else that's there. And what my point is, that to close down channels where people can have open and free debate is not the way to solve the issue with debate and to solve education and improving people in this culture, in this world. And that's why I didn't agree with the social media ban. I could understand what the players are doing, and that was absolutely fine. The media jumping on board to be self-righteous was a load of bollocks. And then you have all these people who, going back to Andy's point, open statements and all this type of stuff, nobody even knows who you are, saying that they're going off social media over the weekend. I'm like, fair play, lads. Well done. Can you stay off?
I thought that was funny today, Gav. Don't mention any names.
Don't mention any names. Right. Listen, that has been the forum. I want to thank Keith Plunkett for coming in at last minute notice. I want to thank Pete over there, all the way from Barcelona.
Barcelona.
And then I want to thank Andrew Young. All the way. Look, I'm putting my hand in. Look, that's magic. Look. I'm going to take it back.
Golfing 8 days in a row.
Oh, you know, day eight of golf, it's been hard. Experienced all sorts.
So jealous
of it. Come here, Kev. I didn't see that comment. I am the worst multitasker in the world. someone else needs to do the comments. I can't see and think at the same time.
Think and see. Right, that has been the show tonight. I have been your host, Phil Casey. Tomorrow night there's a show. I actually don't know what the order of the shows are. It's bound to be somebody. Maybe they'll set fire to the truss and we'll have somebody playing a song on the top of it, and there'll be something else to talk about tomorrow, right? Until then, that's been the show.
There's loads of shows this week. That's all.
Loads of shows.
We have shows all the time, and they're all free. They're all free of charge. We're not looking for money off anyone.
I'm taking a break next week. I've decided, so I'm going to have a night off.
Not paying me enough.
I actually have an assignment to get in that's overdue now at this stage, and it's due in next Tuesday, and I'm already behind as it stands. So I'm going to need the whole night on the Monday night. So that's been the crack. That's been the forum. Hope you all learned something tonight. And if you didn't, go and talk to Gary Neville.
Attention Social Security and SSI recipients. If you did not receive an economic impact payment for your eligible spouse or dependents, you may need to file a 2020 tax return with the IRS and claim the recovery rebate credit. Go to ssa.gov/EIP to see if you need to file a tax return and if eligible for other refundable tax credits, like the child tax credit. That's ssa.gov/EIP. Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Ese último McNugget me toca a mí porque soy la mayor.
¿Y eso qué tiene que ver?
Los mayores se respetan.
Eso no existe, ¿cierto, mamá?
Ya, quédense tranquilas. Aquí hay otra cajita de McNuggets.
Respeto, ¿viste?
No hay rivalidad cuando hay McNuggets deal. Hay un deal para cada salida familiar en McDonald's. Compra uno de tus favoritos, como unos McNuggets de 10 piezas, una Big Mac, una Quarter Pounder with Cheese o un Filet-O-Fish y te llevas otro por $1. Por tiempo limitado, precios y participación pueden variar. Válido para un producto de igual o menor valor.
Sports Social Podcast Network.